Chapter 40. Red October. For the preceding 20 years, Lenin's theory of revolution had been inflexible. Revolution, particularly in a country where the possibilities for political action are non-existent, is not everybody's business. Revolution must be organized and led by professional revolutionaries, the vanguard of the working classes who are trained in every aspect of clandestine struggle. The party constitutes this vanguard. It must be organized in relation to its insurrectional vocation and to external conditions of instability, that is to say, the party must be totally centralized, authoritarian, and rejecting any concession to verbalism. When he departed from his theory on July 4, 1917, he must have rued the day and pondered Karl Marx's observation, "I have sown dragons, and I have reaped fleas." For Lenin was in no way a democrat, he was an establishment elitist. He considered universal suffrage a stupidity, at best a temporary tool. He believed people were by nature incapable of political realism, let alone of planning a revolutionary future. The best brain had to impose its will on the masses. The proletariat must be led for its own good, with or without its consent. Lenin never tired of stating that he was the man for the task, his mind and his organizing ability were superior to all others. He often likened the masses to bleeding sheep, but he himself was more of the nature of a lion. The failed July Revolution sent Lenin back to square one. Next time, there would be no more popular outbursts. The professional revolutionaries would never again allow the crowds to lead them, they would infiltrate them and take control of them. Iron discipline would prevail in every detail and would be enforced ruthlessly. The situation was, however, quite different from the one he had encountered on his April return, when he was greeted with flowers. Lenin was discredited and hated as a traitor by the Russians. The Allies, who had realized that he had the potential to pull Russia out of the war, were targeting him, and the International was publicly denouncing him. Yet Lenin would master this impossible situation within 2 months. Old Prince Lvov had on July 5 handed over the presidency to Kerensky. Russia was still in the war, but not on the offensive. The front had been broken and the Germans controlled the road to Petrograd from Riga. Kerensky, the socialist favored by the Allies, delivered endless speeches and promises. In fact, he was presiding over growing anarchy. Hunger was constantly spreading, looting was commonplace. While mobs seized lands and homes, killing their occupants, Kerensky concentrated his efforts on reducing working hours. The Russian army was falling apart for lack of food and supplies. The only ammunition reaching the front was manufactured in Japan and could not be used with Russian weapons. It was at this time that General Kornilov, a war hero who had escaped a German prisoner of war camp, decided to save the nation from catastrophe by taking power. What Lenin had attempted from the left, he would attempt from the right. He had been appointed commander-in-chief of the Russian armies in July 1917. He was supported by a part of the bourgeoisie, but in words only. True to form, the bourgeois vision was mean and petty, they would whisper words of support for Kornilov but never at the expense of their own purses. On August 27, Kornilov launched a coup d'etat without financial support. Supported by disenchanted workers, various patriotic elements, and three Cossack divisions, he marched toward Petrograd along the railway lines. Kerensky, panicked, frantically cried for help in all directions. The Bolshevik leaders he had jailed joined in the mournful chorus. Trotsky feared his end was near, Stalin lamented, "The Soviets have now reached the end of a tormented agony," Suvorin, page 159. Lenin, who had escaped to Finland, stated, "Now they are going to put us, all of us, before the firing squad, they never had a better time to do it." Lenin understood timing, in a similar case he would not have missed the opportunity to shoot his opponents, as he later would demonstrate. Kerensky had jailed the Bolsheviks because he feared their ability to overthrow him. Now as Kornilov approached he saw them as saviors, he would release them, he would arm them, and they would do battle with Kornilov. The Bolsheviks could not believe their eyes, the man who had jailed them was putting them back in the saddle. Lenin followed everything from Finland. He organized 30,000 men to block Kornilov's access to Petrograd. Kerensky requisitioned all food and supplies to hand them over to the Bolsheviks. Kornilov met the well-armed, well-disciplined and well-fed Bolsheviks with soldiers exhausted by days of forced marching and months of privation. His appeal to the bourgeois for money to feed his men had yielded nothing. The lack of supplies forced Kornilov to give up and witness a disintegration of his forces. Kerensky was saved, but he could no longer return the Bolshevik tiger to its cage. Lenin explained his position: if the party saved Kerensky from a military coup, it was only with the aim of disposing of him in a more definitive way. Only Kerensky's mercantile mentality and sudden burst of panic could have led him to believe otherwise. Lenin had learned his lesson well. The crowd would be inflamed by professional agitators and insurrection would be carried out like a commando raid. Never again in Russia would people be let loose to play at revolution. Now the Bolsheviks were armed, guns had given them power. Lenin summed it up: the time has come. Now that Kornilov's coup had been averted, Kerensky asked the Bolsheviks to put down their arms, only to be laughed at. Trotsky became ruler of the Petrograd Soviet and Lenin moved in for the kill. Lenin organized what he considered a prerequisite for a successful revolution: creation of an insurrectional headquarters, occupation of strategic locations, and specific revolutionary operations. All his instructions were given from his hideout in Finland. Fearing assassination, he would not return to Petrograd until the eve of the insurrection, when everything had been put into place according to his orders. Lenin still had to deal with those communists who wanted a left-wing coalition with other parties as a way to ensure victory. He was determined to use them for all they were worth and at the same time to ignore what he regarded as half-baked and treasonable ideas. He wooed them by speaking their language: the party will guarantee the peaceful development of the revolution, the peaceful election of delegates by the people, a peaceful policy of consensus among all left-wing parties within the Soviets, the experimentation with other parties, programs, the sharing of power among parties, sovereign, page 162. While the left-wingers were lulled into supporting the Soviets by such a soothing vision, Lenin worked feverishly for the implementation of his real policy. Acquiring power and never letting it go was Lenin's aim. He made clear that to his henchmen, assuming power is a matter of insurrection. Political programs will appear only after power has been seized. It would be disastrous to wait for the doubtful elections of November 7. People have the right and the duty to settle matters by force, not by votes. Any revolutionary who would let such a moment escape would be guilty of the highest of crimes. When the time came, Lenin advised what to do with the left-wing compromisers: we must wage an implacable war against them and expel them mercilessly from all revolutionary organizations. Lenin was only interested in results. He hired the best professional agitators of the day because he knew they would always outperform the hotheads. If Lenin were operating today, he would use banks, computers, and the news media as the most efficient ways of imposing his will. Gorky was amazed at Lenin's manipulative power, at his utter lack of scruples, and his contempt for people. Lenin is no towering leader but a cynical manipulator without any regard for honor or people's welfare or human lives. In fact, Lenin had no feelings toward humanity because the only thing that mattered to him was the revolution. People were to be used merely as tools to serve Lenin's revolutionary abstractions. His all-encompassing mind worked out in detail the implementation of his revolutionary theories. Indifferent to money or the trappings of power, he understood the substance and chemistry of power. Kerensky had given the Bolsheviks power in the form of arms and money for the purpose of opposing a right-wing revolution. Lenin used the power to consolidate and expand. The Russian army was targeted for further infiltration. Lenin brought the cell system, whereby secret agents were positioned at every decision-making level of the armed forces, to a science. There were 200,000 soldiers, whom Kerensky had kept away from the front, around Petrograd. Lenin infiltrated the whole corps in no time. The Petrograd garrison became Lenin's own private army. Discipline was ruthlessly enforced, and political indoctrination never let up. After years of neglect and disorder, the army had found someone with the iron will to regiment and motivate them. The men may not have understood Lenin's ideology, but they respected his drive and single-mindedness of purpose. Kerensky had no understanding of what Lenin was about. He regarded the Bolshevik leader as just another politician peddling issues and promises as a way to get votes. He never for one second thought that Lenin could have meant a word he said. To Kerensky it was all an act, part of the haggling in the bazaar of politics. When the show was over, they would all sit down and share the spoils of power. Kerensky was quite confident that his haggling ability would get the better of the Bolsheviks. They would receive some power but would share it with Kerensky and his cronies. 5 days before the insurrection that would sweep him out of power, Kerensky pondered confidently, "Bolshevism is falling apart and we have nothing to fear, Russia is with us." Kerensky saw that very few people actually supported Bolshevism, but he had ignored Lenin's recruitment of 40,000 shock troops among workers and disaffected soldiers in the Petrograd area. Kerensky disposed of a military and police force 70 times superior to Lenin's shock troops, later known as the Red Guards. More than 10 million soldiers were nominally under Kerensky's control, but in fact they were totally disorganized and demoralized, unusable for any purpose. As far as the 140 million Russians, they were too hungry to be for anybody. The chaos brought by years of inept government had turned the population into an inert mass. Out of millions of soldiers and people, Kerensky could in fact rely on barely 10,000 men. Trotsky wrote, "We were certainly weak, but we Bolsheviks were facing an enemy far more numerous, but also much weaker than us. Numbers have nothing to do with politics. History abounds in similar cases where a small, well-organized number of people has overwhelmed huge crowds." Lenin knew the necessity of extreme prudence and absolute secrecy. He remembered that his small and simple Central Committee had been infiltrated by three Tsarist undercover agents. He was distrusted by everyone, even his closest allies, like Kamenev and Zinoviev. Lenin gave orders, but never discussed or revealed his whole plan. Since he was a supreme tactician and strategist, he needed neither debate nor approval from other members of the Soviets. To do so would have meant security leaks and the ruination of any plan. Lenin believed the greater the surprise, the greater the victory. Consultation and the seeking of consensus were always made to hide and protect his real intent. Only when his purpose had been achieved would he inform his Soviet colleagues of what had happened. By then it was a fait accompli, history. The last days of the Kerensky government ground out slowly and silently. It rained heavily. Every day at noon, Petrograd was shaken by a blast from the old cannon of the fortress of St. Peter and St. Paul. On October 23, 1917, Lenin, in complete disguise, moved to a hideout in the workers' district of Vyborg. The area was under virtual Red Guard control. Everything was ready. On the night of the 24th, the Central Committee was convened secretly. A single man, carrying Lenin's orders, gave each member precise instructions as to what to do, hour by hour. The General Congress of Soviets was to be held the following day. Lenin had decided not to wait for its opinion, which could have been negative, and took steps to thwart potential trouble. At the first attempt of doubtful elements, those who would treat with Kerensky, to take to the streets, "You will wipe these criminals from the face of the earth." Lenin organized the insurrection meticulously. The town was divided into zones under the authority of militia leaders. Each objective was clearly defined, as were the forces required to reach it. Everyone received weapons suitable to the role he had been assigned. 80 machine gun emplacements were ready to open fire. Two specially selected members of the Central Committee would direct the seizure of the railways, the post office, and the telephone and telegraphic exchanges the minute the insurrection order was given. Food supplies had been organized for all the insurrectionists. The insurrection headquarters were located at the Smolny Palace, but Lenin had also installed another high command at the St. Peter and St. Paul Fortress, ready to take over if for any reason the first high command ceased to function. While Lenin's iron-fisted preparations were being carried out, Kerensky was still playing politics as usual. In the dead of night, the Bolsheviks seized all of Petrograd's strategic centers, communications, rail stations, power stations, food and weapons depots, all printing plants and the state bank. The next morning General Kovinkov informed Kerensky, "The situation in Petrograd is terrible. There are no riots in the streets, but that is only because the Bolsheviks have taken control of them. Public buildings have been occupied and people are being arrested systematically. Security guards have abandoned their posts. The Bolsheviks also have a list of public officials to be arrested. Due to a delay by the naval units, the army headquarters and the Winter Palace had not yet been taken over. Because the insurrection was conducted with military precision, Petrograd was relatively quiet. Lenin refused to appear in public until all public buildings were under his control. At last the naval detachment arrived and landed from the Neva River. The cruiser Aurora lay off the Winter Palace, ready for combat. An ultimatum for surrender was given. There was no response. During the course of an hour and a half the Aurora fired 36 times, with only 2 hits. The damage was negligible, but as Lenin pointed out, the noise was enough to get results without destroying the building. The 1,000 defenders of the palace capitulated while the cabinet ministers stayed seated around the council room table. They surrendered without any resistance. Their leader, Kerensky, had disappeared in the morning. Dressed as a woman, he was spirited away in the official car of the United States Embassy. The bombardment had no impact on Petrograd's daily routine. People continued to go to the theaters, which remained open during the entire insurrection. The ruble was worthless, people paid with an egg to get in. As soon as his men were in control of the Winter Palace, Lenin took off his wig and heavy glasses and for the first time appeared at the Congress of Soviets. After 4 months of hiding out, Lenin had planned and achieved a revolution from his Finnish lair. It was his masterpiece. His sudden reappearance had a prodigious effect. He was hailed and acclaimed interminably. He had forced everybody's hand, and he had won. In politics, winning is everything. Lenin owed it all to his secret tactics. The revolutions of the spring and summer, on the other hand, had failed for lack of a dominating mind. As the applause died down, Lenin announced that the war would stop immediately and that all land was forthwith confiscated. He created an iron government run by people's commissars. All knee-jerk Democrats were excluded. Lenin demanded that a new central executive committee be elected. The Bolsheviks were in full control of the government and the absolute masters of Russia. What would Marxism bring the Russian people? Within the first 18 months, 8.5 million would be executed or starved to death, as many dead as in 4 years of World War. This massive slaughter did not trouble the Bolshevik leaders. Trotsky's answer to critics was, "Melancholy pondering on the slaughter did not prevent people from breeding." On the night of the coup, October 25, 1917, old-style Lenin announced that he would cease hostilities with Germany. 7 months after the Tsar's downfall, Germany would finally be able to close down its Eastern Front. Although Lenin and the Kaiser had coincidental interests, both were in actuality playing with fire. Lenin needed peace but had no intention of helping the Germans. The capitalist Reich was a prime enemy, to be brought down by violent revolution. Lenin was not going to do anything to strengthen Germany if he could help it. The Kaiser, for his part, knew that Lenin had always wanted to overthrow his regime and kept an uneasy watch on Bolshevik developments.